The levy on the goose flock was fixed by custom and not by generosity. Yet Dietrich always treated it after the manner of a gift. While he did much gardening of his own and owned a milch cow which he farmed to Theresia, his priestly duties precluded him from devoting his time to raising food, and so the village tithed of their own sustenance to maintain him. The remainder of his benefice came from Archdeacon Willi in Freiburg and from Herr Manfred, in whose gift it lay. He pulled a finning from his scrip and placed it in Seppel's palm. This, too, was a customary duty, which was why the young men of the village jostled for the privilege of delivering the tithe payments. "I'll put this against my second furlong," the boy announced, dropping the coin into his own scrip, "and not use it to buy myself out of my duties like some I could name." "You're a frugal lad," Dietrich said. Ulrike had joined them and stood now holding hands with the boy, while Otto panted and his gaze darted from boy to girl with puzzled jealousy. "So, Ulrike," Dietrich said, "you are prepared for the wedding?"
The girl bobbed. "Yes, father."
She would be 12 the next month, a grown woman, and the union of the Bowers and the Ackermans had been long in the planning. Through arrangements comprehensible only to an ambitious peasant, Volkmar Bauer had organized a swap involving 3 other villagers, several furlongs, some livestock, and a bag of copper pfennigs, so as to settle the manse called Unterbach on his son. The trades had enabled both the Bowers and the Ackermans to bring their plots together in a more compact arrangement. "Fewer turnings of the plough team," Felix Ackerman had explained with grave satisfaction. Dietrich, watching the young couple depart, hoped the union would prove as loving for the couple as it promised to be advantageous for their kin. The Minnesingers extolled the virtues of affection over calculation, and peasants ever mimicked the manners of their betters. Yet men had a way of loving that which might prove profitable. Love stopped no king from shopping his sons or daughters. The daughter of England, Manfred had said, was resting in Bordeaux on her way to wed the son of Castile, and for no better reason than that the union would discomfit France. Likely, love stopped no peasant either, however long and narrow his kingdom. At least Seppel and Ulrike were no strangers to each other, as Prince Pedro and Princess Joan were. Their parents had arranged that too, cultivating the affections between their offspring with the same patience with which they pruned their grapevines in hopes of a future vintage. Dietrich entered his yard to the displeasure of the goose tithe, and took a billet and a knife from the shed in the rear. He passed a greeting with Theresia, who was tending the beans in his garden, and stunning a goose from the flock with the billet, he took it to the shed and tied it securely by the legs to a hook there. He slit the throat, being careful not to sever the spine, lest the muscles contract and make the plucking more difficult. "I'm sorry, Brother Goose," he told the carcass, "that my hospitality and yourself has been so short-lived. But I know of some pilgrims who might be grateful for your flesh." Then he hung the goose to bleed out. The next day the goose, now plucked, butchered, and safely wrapped in a leather game bag, Dietrich crossed to Burg Hochwald, where Max Schweitzer awaited with 2 jennets harnessed and ready. "Sweet enough riding for a priest," the sergeant promised, offering him one of the horses. "The nag is as fat as a monk and will stop to eat at every chance, so the resemblance is no happenstance. A good kick in the ribs will start her if she does." He gave Dietrich a leg up and waited until the priest was settled in the saddle. "Do you know the way by now?"
"You're not coming this time?"
"No, the Herr desires I attend to certain duties. Tell me you know the way."
"I know the way, the kiln trail to the windfall, and then I follow the blazes as before."
Schweitzer looked doubtful. "When you see them, try to buy one of those tubes they keep in their scrips. They pointed one at us that first time."
"I remember. You suppose it a weapon?"
"Yeah. Some demons keep their hands near their scrips while we're about. A wary man's hand would hover near his scabbard in just such a way."
"Mine would hover near my crucifix."
"I think it may be a sling of some sort, a miniature potipher."
"Can they be made so small? But it would sling such a mean bullet that it cannot be much of a weapon."
"So said Goliath.
Offer them my Burgundian quillion, if you think they may trade for it.
He had unfastened his belt and held it up to Dietrich, scabbard and all. Dietrich hefted it.
You want this sling of theirs so much?
Well, that is only the question of how I may tell them so.
Surely the demons know Latin?
Dietrich did not argue terms. They lack the lips and tongues for it.
But I will do what I can. Max, who is the second horse for?
Before the soldier could answer, Dietrich heard the approaching voice of Herr Manfred, and a moment later the lord passed through the gate in the outer wall, with Hilda Müller on his arm. He was smiling down at her, covering her hand with his, where it gripped his left elbow. Dietrich waited while a manservant placed a stool and lifted Hilda into the saddle.
Dietrich,
a word, said Herr Manfred. He took the mare by the rein and stroked its muzzle, speaking a few words of endearment to the beast. When the servant had gone past earshot, he said in a low voice,
I understand that we have demons in our woods.
Dietrich gave Max a sharp glance, but the soldier only shrugged. They're not demons, Dietrich told the hare, but distressed pilgrims of a strange and foreign mien.
Very strange and foreign, if my sergeant can be believed.
Dietrich, I do not want demons in my woods. He held up a hand.
No, nor pilgrims of a strange and foreign mien. Exorcise them, or send them on their way, whichever seems appropriate.
My lord, you and I are of one accord on that.
Manfred stopped petting the beast. I would be grieved to know otherwise. Come tonight after your return.
He released the horse, and Dietrich jerked the jennet's head toward the road.
Move, horse, he said. You'll find more to nibble yonder.
The horses plodded their way past the fields where the harvesters still labored. The salland having been gleaned, the villagers now worked their own manses. The serfs had retired to the curial barn to thresh the lord's grain. The peasants labored in common, moving from strip to strip according to some intricate schedule that the Meyer, the Schultheiss, and the Wardens had brokered long before. A fistfight had broken out in Zur Holzbrücke, a manse belonging to Gertrud Metzger. Dietrich stood in his stirrups to watch, and saw that the Wardens already had matters in hand.
What is it?
Hilda asked as she came abreast of him on the road.
Someone was stuffing grain in his blouse to steal it, and Trude's nephew raised the hue and cry against him on her behalf.
Hilda sniffed.
Trude should remarry and let a man work her land.
Dietrich, who saw no connection between one's widowhood and another's theft, remained silent. They resumed their progress toward the wood. Shortly, he said,
Word of caution? Regarding
the hare? He is a man of appetites. It would be well not to feed them. His wife has been dead now these 2 years. The miller's wife said nothing for a space, then she tossed her head and said,
What would you know of appetites?
Am I not a man?
Hilda looked at him sideways.
A fair question.
If you'd pay the fine under the linden, you could prove it to me. But the fine is doubled if the woman's married.
The heat rose in Dietrich's neck, and he watched her for a while as their horses plodded steadily onward. The Frau Müller rode with the inelegance of the peasant, flat against the saddle, bouncing against it with each step. Dietrich looked away before his thoughts could travel much further. He had tasted from that table, and had found its pleasures overrated. By God's grace, women held little appeal for him. It was not until they had entered the forest that Hilda spoke again.
I went to pray him food and drink for those awful things in the woods, that was all. He gave me the sacks you see here, tied behind the saddle. If he thought a price for the favor, he did not name it.
Ah, I had thought...
I know what you thought. Try not to think about it so much.
And with that remark, she kicked heels to her horse and trotted ahead of him down the path, her legs splaying artlessly at every jounce. Reaching the charcoal kiln, Dietrich reined his mount in and spoke a short prayer for the souls of Anton and Josef. Shortly, the horse whickered and shied, and Dietrich looked up to see two of the strange creatures watching from the edge of the clearing. He froze for a moment at the sight. Would he ever grow accustomed to their appearance?
Images, however grotesque, were one thing when carved of wood or stone, quite another thing when formed of flesh.